Welcome to another episode of the Growth Focus Podcast, where we bring together tech leaders from all across the globe to share their time, their insights, and their expertise with us to help us grow. My name is Gary Lafty, the host and creator of Authority Accelerators, where we help tech leaders build better relationships, close better deals, and be seen and heard as the authority in their space rather than just another expert. On this episode, I am really excited to have our guest with us. So without further ado, we've got so much to talk about. Let's jump straight into it. Ned, it's an absolute pleasure and honor to have you as our guest on this episode. Why don't you start off by introducing yourself and what is it that you do?
I'm Ned Fasulo out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I am, I guess, in all intents and purposes, an entrepreneur, but specifically I've spent the last 30 years in and out of the tech sector in various forms and fashions. Got some other things going on as well, but primarily that's what my day-to-day is at this point.
Well, I can't wait to dive deeper into this because obviously when we've been speaking before, there are so many avenues that I want to explore. But let's just start off with dialing back a little bit. Now, you've built and sold multiple tech businesses in your career. What has been the biggest difference between your first exit and where you are today preparing for your third exit?
But I would say night and day difference. I mean, the difference in the distance between here and Pluto. The first exit was shaky and unknown and brand new, obviously, anybody who's ever done it. Very young when it happened, back in 2010, from having it for almost 5 years. I was lucky enough to exit to a larger firm who was more of an enterprise firm that was looking to develop a more robust SMB division and offering under managed services. So worked out great. That company eventually exited as a group. And then I got hooked up with some great people again later down the road. And we did a third one because we just can't help it. And so we're kind of at the halfway point of this third one from being able to, maybe a little past half point, I'd say, from looking at exit options for our investors and our partners.
So there are people listening, Ned, thinking, okay, I'm not even on my first exit yet, but I'd love to get to an exit from that. What really piece of advice would you give those founders who are potentially looking at their very first exit in preparing their business for an exit?
I think it's two things. And I mean, again, this is worth 25 cents worth of advice, but I think it's two things. I think in the tech world, and the tech is a very broad umbrella, right, of all the things that go on in technology. I would say either you have a company that creates a platform or a technology that other people want to use, or you are in the service side of tech, which is your managed service providers, your manufacturers, things like that. On the one side, build as much connectivity and openness and collaborative features that you can with that platform, if it's a software or an app or something like that. On the other side, it is all about recurring revenues so that you can get the most multiples on EBITDA or gross annual or however you're being evaluated. Those are the things that I think will make those two sides of the house, you know, valuable.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, that recurring income was certainly a big factor in our exit. They knew they could rely on that income by buying a company. So we talk about MSPs. I want to dive deep into this because, you know, this is what I've been really looking forward to this particular episode. When we've spoken before, we've discussed how MSPs really need to evolve drastically now to survive. What does the future of IT services look like in your eyes? And where are most MSPs getting it wrong today?
I think, you know, and I'm speaking strictly from, I would say, an East Texas to Florida, Southeast kind of thing. And look, we're always 2 or 3 years behind the major curves in anything. Technology, definitely that. I still see a lot of companies trying to do it the way that it's always been done, even before managed services, right? I was lucky enough to have started the first MSP in Louisiana back in 2004. And we did it by the MSP book, a price per machine per month, the monitoring, the whole nine yards, right? It was, you know, for 5 years after that, there were people running around Louisiana, Mississippi saying, oh, we're an MSP. Well, just because you put log me in on a computer or screen connect does not make you an MSP. There's a set of fundamental things that you need to address. I think today you have a lot of good MSPs. They're not bad companies and they don't have bad technicians, but they're still operating out of a very archaic method of managing people's networks. A lot of them have really fought the serverless environments as more and more things are in the cloud and people don't need that. You know, the server used to be the thing that made the network go. Now it is the largest point of failure on a network, bar none. So I do see a lot of them struggling in that regard. I think the next biggest thing that will define a high level, highly operative, highly functional MSP versus one that's just going to eventually go away is the use of AI at the tier one help desk. Tier one help desk, as a piece of the tech industry, has an expiration date on it, thanks to AI. If you look at every major RMM, which in case nobody knows, that's remote monitoring and maintenance. So that's going to be your Atera, your ConnectWise, your Autotask, your Kaseyas, your SolarWinds, all those baseline platforms, right? All of them in the last year have launched forward with AI ticket response and AI this. You've got Microsoft building AI into their Surface line of computers, which Surface is the largest selling brand of laptop in the world right now. So the more Windows starts to say, we're going to create AI in our machines that can help self-repair and self-maintain a computer at a base level. And you have the RMMs doing the same thing on that side. So you get to the point where a ticket is opened by a client and the AI jumps in and literally can help troubleshoot and do it. Tier one help desk, which for most customers is the worst moment of their life having to call support. When you stack all those pieces of that puzzle together, you have a recipe that I think in 2 to 4 years in a lot of medium size and large MSPs, tier one help desk won't even be a thing. What they'll be looking to recruit are network technicians, cybersecurity technicians, project managers for implementation, and people who are very adept in Microsoft 365 services, AWS, and Google Business Suite as the three pillars of the cloud. But I think that there are a lot of people who better up their skill set if they're tier one help desk people, because there is an expiration date on their position. That AI is simply going to take that part of our industry and revolutionize it, which will be amazing for the companies that engage in that, because their profitability will rise, their time management will be back under their control, and they'll have happier clients every single day because the problem is being solved.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a stark warning, really, for those who are listening and watching this particular episode. If you continue to do the way that it's always been done, you're going to get left behind and it will affect your profitability. And at the end of the day, you know, you're in business for profit, you know, as opposed to just going through the motions.
Absolutely. And I mean, you think about profitability. You know, the biggest expenses in an MSP are payroll and your licensing fees through your Pax8, your TD Synnex, your, you know, whatever it is, right? Those are your two biggest expenses. So, and not to sound like we're cutting jobs, right? We don't want to do that. We want to elevate the people we have. But if I could cut my payroll by 25% and increase my sales and my profitability, any business owner is going to seriously listen to that conversation and figure out if that's a viable thing for them to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because at the end, as you say, people don't really seem to realize, you know, as you say, the two biggest ones, which are payroll and the licensing costs, because it's just the way they've always done it. But when things change and when you actually break it down, you think, okay, what can I do to reduce my cost, to increase my profitability and be efficient? Yeah. Because there's no point cutting costs if you're not being efficient at what you're doing. What other smarter ways do you believe, Ned, the founders can structure an IT business for healthier margins today?
I mean, I got to be honest with you. If I could do it all over again on this one, I would, and this is a very simple tactic, I would not take on the burden of the 365 licensing. That's, you know, 80, 90% of your client base. It's a huge expense. The margins are so thin. I would tell anybody trying to overhaul or start up an MSP, let the client's credit card pay for their own Microsoft licensing. Get them the best, you know, year-long pricing you can get them. Charge a $5 to $6 or $7 support fee on that email service for each box every single month and get that cost off of your P&L. 100% your P&L will love you for it. And we're so deep down the road in it, we're looking at over the next year, could we do that? It's an advantage to the client because the client will actually save a few bucks, okay, on the licensing. They'll get a better annual rate, but what they'll also have is control. One of the big things that when you go through client transitions where one MSP wins the client from another. The chaos that is around moving their credentials out of a tenant, your credentials in, and it's always the Microsoft stuff that causes the headaches and the complications, for better or for worse. And I would tell any MSP, small ones especially, and anybody starting them up, it looks good in terms of revenue on your books, but when you look at an 8% or 10% margin on that Microsoft business, let the customer pay their own Microsoft bill and charge them to support those email addresses. The top two things that cause support tickets, or I'd say three, I don't know my password, is number one. Number two is this thing is not printing to the printer. And number three is something to do with Microsoft, with Office or Teams or something like that. So you can stage that properly to where you never have that cost burden on your P&L or your books at all. And as you grow your client base, you look better and better and better on paper.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, Ned. If you can transfer, just get it off your books and just pass it on to the customer. But one thing, you know, you mentioned it just really quickly and briefly, but one thing that really stood out for me is you actually giving more control back to the client. The buyers are different today. The clients are different today than they were 5, 10, 15 years ago.
Right. I mean, in 10 or 15 years, hell, 5 years ago, clients, you know, they always come to you with the, I just want you to handle it. But really, that's not the case. Because the moment they feel like they don't have control of something, they look at you as the vendor partner in a much different light. And it's not a positive one all the time. What we have tried to do with our current company, Apex, is show the clients that there is a level of transparency in front of them, whether it's through a client portal with ticketing. You know, if we miss a ticket, they know. If we miss, you know, a due date, they know. We have to, you know, we have to eat it sometimes to show that we're in this together. But making sure that they have their own GoDaddy account or network solutions account, their domain is theirs. What we try to educate clients on is, your domain name, your URL, is not just the center of your IT in your company. It is the center of the marketing of the brand of your company because it leads to your company website. So when you don't have control of that thing, you have lost control, in my opinion, of both sides of your house, the client-facing revenue generating side and the internal IT support side. So one of the first things we do is make sure that our clients' domains, they are the registrant, they are the administrative, and we are the technical and the billing. And we educate them on, you control this. If we get hit by a bus tomorrow, or if you don't like our company and you want to move on, wonderful. There's less transition there and more control in their mind, even if they never touch it. But we live in a commoditized IT market. Everything is available to be gotten somewhere in some fashion. And thanks to Microsoft and Google, we all have to sell it at the same price. So at the end of the day, the rule of people buy from people really does apply in IT, because we all have the same arrows in our quiver. It may have a different logo on it, but a router's a router, a switch is a switch, and email's email. You know, when companies try to say, well, you know, we stand out from our competition based on X, Y, and Z, the X, Y, and Z really is, do we get to tickets on time and do we have happy clients?
Yeah, John, that's a great segue, Ned, into really what I really want to talk about next. Is before we can even talk about profitability, we have to talk about revenue. Before we can talk about revenue, we have to talk about differentiation and making sure they are heard. Because what we hear time and time and time again on this show and through clients is MSPs, VARs, and providers really struggling to get their message heard or stand out from everybody else, because everybody else is saying exactly the same thing almost. So what insights would you be able to share with people about trying to, or what to do to stand out and not sound like a typical MSP that everyone's heard before?
I'm going to tell you, it's damn near impossible. I mean, we joke in this industry, it's been a joke in Louisiana for a long time, because all the guys that own, you know, tech companies, there's not a whole lot of us. It's not a big state. We all know each other, and, you know, we all know each other's struggles and all that. But the, you know, the oldest joke here is that you just have to suck less than the last guy to get the deal, right? I mean, and that's unfortunately kind of the world we live in. And in a, you know, in a place like Louisiana, Mississippi, Arkansas, you know, Alabama to an extent, we're not like a Florida, Texas, or New York, or California, where you have real enterprise, then you have large business, then you have medium, small, micro, and then, you know, your nonprofits, your mom and pops. Louisiana's largest enterprise employer is the state of Louisiana. So pretty much everything in Louisiana is about 80% what you would truly classify as small business, you know, and that's up to, you know, $250 million in revenue. And then you've got some medium-sized companies in terms of what that definition is nationally. So when you boil that down where we are in our part of the country, we're all fighting over the same companies, the same business types, the same everything. And when you look at how a lot of us market in this day and age is referral-based, is somebody said, my buddy said, y'all do good for them. We don't like the guys we're with. Come talk to us. And I'll go and I'll say, well, what have they done wrong? Well, they didn't get to a ticket this quick and they keep us waiting here and they do this. And I say, look, I'm going to be real honest with you. We employ human beings just like your last company did. I will do my best to come in here and give you a better response and do a better job. I think that from a consulting capacity, we will do a much better job in educating you on better decisions when it comes to not just IT support, but maybe there's technology that runs your fabrication shop or you're this or you're that. We'll be involved in all of it. But I tell every client, at the end of the day, I have the same level of human being that every other company has, and we will make human mistakes here and there. So just be okay with that. And I think that you'll like what we have to offer. That's my sales pitch 90% of the time. Now, I have been told my pricing is lower than most, probably to our detriment on our P&L. But we, you know, a lot of what we are faced with as MSPs is an old-fashioned, you know, Mexican standoff on price. Well, he'll do it for, he's pitching me $50 a machine per month. You're pitching me $39.99 a machine per month, so we're going to go with you. That decision, a lot of times by the business owner, is being made 1,000,000% out of a cost because we don't have a very mature, base of small business owners that understand technology is a utility and a necessity, just like water and power. But they see it as, I've got to pay that bill every month for, I don't even know what it's for. I don't know what they do. Well, the moment that network goes down, they sure as hell know what we do because we make sure they get back to work. But there's all those factors, you know, that for people like us down here that own the companies, we're really selling on a price war and just being able to say that we can do it better than the last guy, even with no real proof that that's going to happen. So we take extra care to advance the amount of initial consult that we do and really dig into their business. You know, if we can spend 30 days with a couple of meetings, getting to know their team, getting to know their business, we can help them make better decisions. We can help them build a better mousetrap. We always have problems with the one that says, we fired our guy yesterday. He was awful. Can you take us over tomorrow? I can do it, but it's going to be chaos for the next 30 days because I don't have any idea what you do. I have no idea how your network is set up. But if this is a 911 call, we'll do our best to, you know, help you.
Yeah. I think the key message there, Ned, from listening to you there is it's about building better relationships because 100%. Someone can always have a sharper pencil. One thing so that I learned through my business is that you can only go so far in pricing. This is the challenge because there's always going to be someone who comes there, I can sharpen my pencil lower. And then it's a fight to the bottom. So the only way to try and keep your head above the water then is to have better relationships, like you said. And I say, look, let's spend more time with them at the very beginning.
Yeah. And it's like if you have your in this region, we've got probably 6 to 10, I would say, large MSPs that are, you know, more than half of their business is in box selling. They're still selling E-rate to schools. They're selling 7-figure deals of equipment and then putting it together and then walking out the door kind of thing, right? They all realize that recurring revenue has to be a part of it because in the box selling, it is a race to zero. Sometimes at no margin and just surviving off of a back-end check from the manufacturer because of the volume that they're doing. So they all know this and they're all trying to figure that out and compete in a better way to generate recurring dollars. I mean, look, every industry is looking at this. I mean, we have a client that does facilities and building maintenance, and they have created a way to do it on a recurring model, which is inclusive of some of the parts and pieces and repairs. Doctors are doing concierge membership-based medicine. We have two of those clients. Everybody gets that if at some point there's any value to this business, it is in what the recurring revenue is. And if the owner exits, will those customers still continue to pay that bill every month and procure those services?
Yeah, and that, again, goes back to what we said said at the very beginning, your company is worth far more if you have recurring income. Otherwise, what you're buying? You're buying a book of business that they might not even buy. They right. might even pay them any more money. So you want that recurring or almost a semi-guarantee that there is this recurring money coming in to make the company valuable.
And in our case, I can tell you that there are companies, and we're one of them, where I can tell you that 25% of my customer base won't sign a contract. They've been burned so many times that the only way to keep the business you've won is to keep performing. And when you look at that, and other MSPs are in the same boat, they have clients that say, I will give you my business, but I'm not signing a contract ever again on IT. We've been burned 3 or 4 times. We're not doing it. And that's the world we live in. So, I mean, at some degree, people buying MSPs in the Southeast understand that this revenue is only as good as if we buy them out and how we're going to service those accounts when we come in. What we do see is private equity firms who love to come through and roll up 2 or 3 MSPs at a time. That's a great day for me because all of their customers immediately are not serviced properly. And those customers immediately start shopping for a better company to work with. I would say from the acquisition level, private equity does not understand that. They will roll up these MSPs. The owners will exit. They'll bring in some people off the street who have experience, but they have no connection to the client base. And service immediately starts to do this to all the customers. In every scenario over the past 10 years, that is what's happened, at least in the Southeast.
Yeah, well, it's not just IT and tech. You look at any particular industry, whenever a big box name has come in and starts rolling these things up into one, they cannot service them all. And they are, as you say, the people, the founder-led sales and the founder-led marketing and the relationships that were there, they've all exited. They've taken their money, they've left, and now they have to bring in these employees who have no connection and therefore... And they just can't give that service. Or if they are trying to give service, they're trying to cut it to the bone to make it profitable for the purchase.
And the worst part is when you're sitting down with a new client and they'll look at you and say, no, you're not going to get bought out anytime soon, are you? And you're just thinking, you know, as you know, if you own a piece of it or if you're the owner, all you can think is, you know, no, but, you know, in your head, you're like, I mean, if somebody comes and give me a big fat check, I'm out of here because that's the goal of it, right? Nobody's building IT firms that do MSP support to be generational and be inherited by their kid. That's all crap. Everybody that's done this is going to look for an exit at some point. And it's a double-edged sword for an owner because you have a personal relationship with your clients because you probably sold most of them and you talk to them all the time. But in the same vein, as a business owner, your goal is at some point to exit out. You know,
Absolutely.
You have that feeling of, man, I'm going to exit out at some point, and I know it's just going to, some of these customers are not going to look at me the same way. So, it's a struggle.
Yeah, there is a, I remember when I sold my company, my partner was looking and said we could only sell to a customer, only sell to a buyer that she felt was going to look after our clients better or just as good. Because if she ever felt that they were going to come and buy and just take over and not take care of the clients that we had built years to build up, she didn't want to sell to them. But you can only do that if you put yourself in a position where you are valuable, where your company is valuable. You can dictate who buys your company as opposed to just taking an offer.
Well, look, I'll tell you too. I mean, we're seeing acquisitions of MSPs the last few years that the MSPs were barely and sometimes not profitable, but they were bought for a book of business because the bigger people know that when they're rolling things up, the economies of scale on their costs, even if the MSP is showing no profit or losing money, they can make that one profitable because they can immediately get the highest payrolls off the staff and the licensing and the fees that are used to run the place will instantly drop. Again, they're buying in a volume that's much, much higher, right? So I guess the good news is for MSPs that struggle to be profitable or to break even every year, there are plenty of acquisition and merger opportunities out there because there are people who are going to say, oh, well, MSP one over here has got 150 clients and 100 of them are retail healthcare. Well, that's our market. We want to be in retail healthcare. So we don't care what your books look like. We're going to make you an offer. And if it works, it works. Others are only acquiring companies off of profitability and EBITDA and all of that type of stuff. I think that method is slowly going away simply because there's so many MSPs and there's so many clients being serviced by them that those in private equity can roll up 4 or 5 at a time. And all of a sudden the whole book of business is profitable.
Yeah, but also gives them more buying power as well. So right. The more buying power they've got, as you said, whatever the price, if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And they can walk away from that because they know they're going to be able to pick up, because there are just so many out there that yeah. then go, right, I can pick up this from this bucket here, knowing that they will sell for whatever they can sell for, and that can make it even more profitable.
I think in the next 2 to 3 years, acquisitions like we do them today will continue. I think, though, at around the end of that period, based on how AI really starts to affect our industry, I think it's going to be a lot tougher for owners of MSPs that are small to exit. I think a lot of them are going to be sitting on something that they're going to struggle with showing a value, no matter how many customers they have. Mm-hmm. Because at a certain level, your acquisitions are going to turn into, I don't care about your profit or your EBITDA. I just want your clients, because I'm going to spin up AI tier one over here, and I can eliminate 2/3 of the workforce, and I just need network level technicians to run these networks and to handle cybersecurity issues and such. And I think a lot of small break fix shops and MSPs are going to find themselves stuck. They're going to have something that they're stuck with.
Yeah, that's a very, very interesting insight, looking down in the future, what might happen. But whilst we're on that, I want to turn 180 now, Ned, because we talked about, you know, we've just finished talking about the end goal, the acquisition side for a founder that's listening. But in order to be an MSP or a VAR, you need vendors. And you have been vocal about the predatory nature of vendor licensing yep. models. So how should a tech business now approach vendor selection?
Oh, very carefully, very carefully. I can tell you that, you know, you have the manufacturers at the top level, and those are the people that create whatever it is, whether it's a software or it's a hardware. Doesn't matter. And then used to be you had a direct relationship with the manufacturer, and the way you procured that was through a distribution place like Ingram Micro or Pax8 or TD Synnex or whatever that was. There's this mid-level group of what I tag them as predatory VARs. And what they do is they go and buy in bulk from, specifically on the software side, you know, millions of licenses with the promise that they're going to give it to you cheaper and they're going to provide some type of monitoring support or SOC support or this and that. And I see a lot of it in the cybersecurity side, okay, where at the end of the day, all they are is another you. They can't prove that their SOC is actually doing anything. They don't provide very much in terms of support or reports. And I've had the unfortunate, I guess, circumstance of finding two of these in the last 3 years and thinking that it was going to be a good partnership, and it turns to dust really, really quickly. I would tell any MSPs out there, be very wary about people who want to sell you bulk licensing where you're being paying for it, whether you're using it or not, in the hopes that you're going to go sell more. Try to deal directly with the manufacturing people and those companies through a distributor as much as possible, because these people are locking MSPs into contracts. And then when you attempt to get out of the contract, they're turning around. And in some cases, I've seen and heard where you're being sued to buy out a contract for a service that doesn't work, that doesn't do what they promised, and that they can show no proof that they're actually doing something behind the scenes. But they sign these lengthy agreements. I mean, I think it's crazy. I guess like every industry, that it has its predators, and I don't think that they're doing it maliciously. I think that they thought it was a great way to do it and a good idea, and then their legal teams get involved and hold the small business guys' feet to the fire, and it becomes a problem. So that's definitely one of the biggest negatives of the industry, I think, at this point, is when you cannot deal, or when you're not allowed to deal, because some in the cybersecurity world, some of those companies have sold out to those mid-level VARs that, you know, they tell you, well, the only people you can buy from is these guys. Okay, well, then I'm not buying your stuff. Mm. Like, pretty simple. I know several companies, myself included, that have dealt with this nightmare. You know, luckily for Louisiana, we're under Napoleonic code for law, which is different than every other state in the country. So lawyers tend to defer to what needs to happen. We're also a non-compete state, and contractually there are things in Louisiana that happen differently than other places. But it doesn't mean that those people aren't out there trying to get the best of small MSPs who are trying to grow. I would say if it's too good to be true, it 100% is too good to be true.
Yeah, that never, never ceases, doesn't it? If it's too good to be true, just watch what you're doing. There's a reason why it is there. Now, for those who don't know, you sit on industry committees. you're seeing things where, you know, where the industry's heading. What do you believe is to be the next big shakeup in tech services over the next, let's say, 5 years or so?
I would say the biggest is the fact that our community college systems are finally picking up on the fact that they can partner with the big players to provide associates and four-year degrees in a tactical skill set, meaning knowing how to operate Cisco networking equipment or HP networking equipment or Aruba networking equipment. The big colleges, your ISDS, you know, college degrees and things like that are still pretty worthless out in the real world. They come out of college a lot of times and they don't really have skill sets. But I can tell you in Louisiana, our community college systems and in Texas as well, they are listening to their committee members that are business owners. And we're telling them, we just told one a month ago in a meeting, they said, we're going to launch a degree in the fall for help desk. And we said, don't waste your time. No need. And when we explained it, they were like, wow. We said, what you double down on is networks, cybersecurity, telecommunications, because those are the things at the end of the day, everybody's got to have internet and it's got to get routed and switched where it needs to go. That's never going to stop. So the shortage of people with those skill sets, though, in the Southeast is incredible. There's just no talent pool. So, you know, sitting on those committees for business owners, I always encourage it because it doesn't matter what industry you're in, you can influence that. But I will say that our industry will continue to have shortages of talent and skill set in networks, in cybersecurity, obviously, which is a big one. And obviously in coding, even though I think AI will eventually handle a lot of the heavy lifting in coding as well to a degree, but you'll still need human eyes on it to you know, dot the I's and cross the T's. But I would say helping our industry create opportunities for workforce advancement, that's everybody's challenge. In the Southeast, we don't compete against each other. We compete for the next guy that's got the credentials that we want.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. Very good point. So listen, as we draw, you know, to the end of our episode here, I've got a couple more questions for you, Ned. I'm looking back over your career. You know, you've had a great career. You've spanned, you know, the length and breadth of start off, you know, the first MSP to where you are now and next thing. What is one piece of advice you wish you'd known when you were starting out?
Well, definitely because of my personality, don't be so cocky. Never act like you know everything. Act like you can find the answer to anything. You know, I'm 54. I grew up in this from there was nothing to CompuServe, AOL, MSN, to the internet, to modems, to selling computers. I mean, the first computer sale I made to a business was in 1996. So I had the advantage of being in the right age group at the right time and getting in that industry and kind of coming up through, you know, computers, telephone systems, wireless networks, software application development, internet, then MSPs, right? There's not many of us that can say that. And like I think we said before when we talked, in Louisiana, there's probably 10 people like me that have been around it long that we can say, you know, yes, we know all of this because we grew up in it. People coming into it today that are in their late 20s, early 30s, it's all just mashed together now. And so it's like, pick the thing that you think you or your company can really be good at to differentiate yourself and make that niche, you know? you know, I'd say there's enough MSP IT support companies. Figure out what that next thing is, whether it's becoming an expert shop in delivering SharePoint solutions or Teams integrations with SharePoint or the collaborative platforms that people are going to use to do their job every day, not just the computer didn't turn on, I need help type of thing. Find what that is and own it, you know, whatever that looks like. And, you know, in this day and age, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of opportunities in a lot of different places. Certainly being involved with AI in any capacity is going to be a smart move for a lot of entrepreneurs and students and things like that. And of course, security. Security is always a thing, and not just cyber. Physical security has as much AI and thought process and project management and you know, all those different flavors as cyber does, you know, because we're building camera systems that can identify license plates, that can snap someone's facial features and upload it into a system that distributes it to hundreds of businesses instantly. I mean, those types of things have a lot of future value. They're almost future proof. So, you know, just stick along those lines, you know, innovate where you can, and you'll create your own customer base.
Well, this leads nicely into the last question, actually, that you're listening to. We may have jumped the gun a little bit, but I've got to ask the question. Is that if you could leave the founders who are listening today, or even those who, you know, are looking at their next step, but they got to grow their company, what were the final thoughts you want to leave them about growth, profitability, sustainability of their companies today?
I mean, as MSPs go, you've got to stay in touch with your customer base, and you've got to almost force them to give you referrals. I think growth through referral is the strongest type of growth. If you're going to market what you do, do it creatively. Don't just do boring ads or boring marketing. Try to create something that's thematic or comical or something that makes people connect to you. In sales, at the end of the day, they'll remember, you know, they won't remember how cheap you are once they're with you, right, from the beginning. They're going to remember the places you messed up, but they're at the end of the day, they're going to remember how you make them feel. And if you make them feel like, even when you screw up, if you make them feel and understand that you do care and you are going to get it fixed, those are clients that stay with you. And when you're selling something, they're going to remember how you made them feel, and then they're going to look at price. So try to bring the relationship back into the game. Everybody, you know, the worst thing I've seen in life is when a bank puts up a billboard that says, you're not just a number. No, absolutely. I'm a number. You're a bank. There's no relationship there. But they hammer that message, even though everybody that hears that knows, nope, there's no relationship. I'm just a number at the bank. And that's okay. That's what it's supposed to be. You know, IT companies, try to build the relationship back into it and into your marketing and into your message, that you want to forge a relationship because you invest a lot of time in working with that customer. If you're just going to lose them after a year, you've lost way more than the client. You've lost a lot of time you cannot get back. And then you have to replicate that process with the next client. What if every client you had, even if they didn't have a contract, was with you for 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 4 years, and they just told people, yeah, we have our ups and downs, but at the end of the day, you know, Ned's company is going to get it done, or John Doe's company, they're always going to come through and they're going to get it done for us. That, to me, is more valuable than anything other than trying to be as profitable as you can in a highly, highly competitive and commoditized industry that we're in.
Well, that is a fantastic place of an insight to finish on. Ned, thank you very much for your time today. If people want to get hold of you or particularly work with you, what's the best way of doing that?
It's really simple. Apex Technologies, headquartered in Louisiana. We work with clients from East Texas to Florida. Our website is Apex Tech.
Okay. Well, I'll make sure that that link is in the show notes so people can just click and straight to you. So Ned, thank you very much for your time and your insights and your expertise today. It's been an absolute honor having you on the show.
I appreciate it. It was a great show and look forward to putting it out there on our social media channels.
Likewise. Thank you, Ned. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us for yet another episode of the Growth Focus podcast. No doubt you are taking loads of notes or you've had some bright sparks and thought, wow, never thought of it this way. Make sure you like it. Make sure maybe you put it down in the comments so other people can benefit from what you've learned from Ned today. But more importantly, as always, please share these insights out with everybody else so that other people can grow. So once again, thank you, Ned, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us. Until next time, keep striving, keep working hard, but more importantly, please make sure you are profitable. See you later. Bye-bye.